It's time to take this game into overtime.
The official podcast
of the Average Joe's Sports Show
on 90.9 The Light Sports
for our generation.
We'll go into the Furious Five right now, and we'll take a look at what is going on there as we had plenty of sports going on. So we will start World Baseball Classic. What happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened. The USA taking it home.
Yeah. Final, getting that win over
Puerto
Rico. Exactly.
8-0, the final score. And the United States of America able to take home their first ever World Baseball Classic championship. Oh, isn't it beautiful?
Something we haven't really seen yet, but like it's finally given me a little bit of weight to actually watch it a little bit maybe
did
next time.
Did you guys watch the game? I did not watch the game.
I cannot say that I did.
I believe I was folding laundry when I found out that they had won.
And, I mean, the problem is it's on the same time as March Madness.
Like, yes, that was an issue.
They need to...
Big scheduling problem.
They need to fix that, for one.
Yeah, so you had the 16-team pool. It went down to four. And then you had the USA and Puerto Rico ultimately in the final played in Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles. They won in front of over 51,000 people. 8-0, the final score, as they were readily able to handle Puerto Rico. Now, the first thing I want to ask you guys about this is, how much weight do you think this have? What does this mean for America in terms of sports, is that we're able to win the Baseball Classic? You talk about baseball being America's pastime, and we hadn't won it. It had kind of been manhandled by some of those Asian countries, especially, you know, Japan, China, and then Puerto Rico making it there. So for the United States to come in and win it on our own turf there, how much do you think it means a lot?
I think it means something. Like, obviously, the because I was scrolling through on Twitter, and I would always see people talking about it. I mean, these are people that cover baseball, but they were all talking about it, saying how happy they were. Every few days, I would just see Adam Jones in all caps with multiple exclamation points. And then I saw the video of him robbing Manny Machado. That was pretty great.
Yeah. Probably the highlight of the World Baseball Classic so far. But as far as like significance, I'm not sure that it's been it's not been around enough for years to have that much of a significance for me, because there's a lot of other things. Like we were saying, March Madness is going on at the same time, and that's always the most exciting time of the year.
It doesn't carry as much of the weight as the World Cup does.
Yeah, like, I would say I think the World Cup's a little bit more iconic and includes more of the world.
If Team USA does well in the World Cup, the entire country becomes soccer fans for 2 weeks.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I'm included in that.
And even,
absolutely.
Even after it ends, like even after the World Cup ends, MLS attendance will spike, MLS ratings will spike.
Because people, FIFA video game sales probably spike as well.
Yes. Yeah.
People, all they want to do is play soccer. I just got back from a hockey tournament for college hockey. All I want to do is talk about hockey. That's kind of what you have is when you watch something for a long period of time. It can get in with you. In terms of this being a uniting event, this is the fourth time that the World Baseball Classic has been held. And Dominican Republic was the defending champion. They were eliminated in the second round. It drew 973,000 people in total, in the 40 games that were played in the World Baseball Classic, 24,342 people per game. Marcus Stroman was named the most valuable player. Again, what kind of effect do you think this could have leading into the baseball season and the United States dominance as a country and a team in baseball?
And I think this will keep going, because I think as the tournament kept going on, some of the American players who turned it down, like Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, said they regretted it. How good this team played this year? Add Bryce Harper and Mike Trout to that. Adam Jones becomes your backup center fielder. Like a multi-time gold glover, occasional MVP candidate becomes your backup center fielder.
However, you look at it from the other angle, where maybe these athletes and these superstars that we kind of as fans miss because they're not competing. You look at a couple of years ago, I don't know if it was the first World Baseball Classic or the second one, but I remember Mark Teixeira literally broke his wrist on a check swing.
I think that's not something that you want to do, especially in the World Baseball Classic.
Essentially ended his career.
That's the risk you take, though. Like when hockey players go to the Olympics, when soccer players go to the World Cup. That's the risk you take is you...
Oh, no, yeah, I completely understand that because you're going and you're basically, at least for this, for these however many, maybe, what is it, 2 or 3 weeks that this tournament goes on, you're basically like kind of jumping into competition and not kind of going through spring training where you're like limited in bats and stuff like that. You're playing, going in cold.
You're playing a full game instead of jumping straight into spring training as well. And that, like as an Orioles fan, I'm happy Adam Jones and Manny Machado were playing high level games for these past couple weeks instead of at spring training.
Well, yeah. It's kind of like, you know, you have players for the NFL that don't go to the Pro Bowl because they don't want to risk injury.
That's
it's
what I kind of
something that isn't contingent on, like, what are they playing for? They're playing to win their league, their season, and anything else extracurricular that they're doing might not be as important. But do you think there was enough decent talent for the USA for it to be a draw? Necessarily, because you're playing to compete with other teams, but you're also playing to draw in
for ratings,
ratings and fans, attendance, and all of that. So you take a look at the talent there, guys like Drew Smiley, Buster Posey, Tyler Clippard, Tanner Rourke, Adam Jones, Andrew McCutchen, Juan Carlos Stanton was there, Paul Goldschmidt.
He had a big home run, so Carlos Stanton.
Yeah, Ian Kinsler. Eric Hosmer, so some of these names, Murphy as well, they're pretty big names. Some of them a little washed up, some a little bit older.
Yeah, but yeah, like like I said, you didn't have Trout, you didn't have Harper, but you had a lot of other big names.
Yeah, you had household names from their locations and where their niches are for where they play. So I think at least for those teams where you look at fandom from like. You mentioned Hosmer, like the Royals. At least they generated some interest in the last couple of years after winning a World Series. You have other people like McCutchen that you don't really see all too often because, let's face it, the Pirates aren't really making the playoffs all that often. And if they are, they're out quick. But the fact of the matter is you don't have that one star power kind of guy. I know it could have been someone like, I think Max Scherzer was going to be on it. And then he pulled out last minute because he had some kind of like stress in a throwing hand. I think I'm not sure, but it all comes down to what they think is going to be most beneficial for them, and sometimes the ratings suffer because of that.
Yeah, well, you know what? There were some pretty interesting baseball games, the semifinals and the finals, which I thought was interesting, as they had pool play held literally around the world, which is kind of tough.
Yes.
Yeah, honestly, if you take a look at it.
One of the pools was in like South Korea.
One of the pools was in Tokyo. And then you had other pools being held in Los Angeles. So, yeah, you had one in South Korea, one in Japan, or two in Japan, and then one in Miami, one in Mexico, and one in San Diego. And then the semifinals, if you made it, was held in Los Angeles. So, I mean, you're going from Tokyo to Los Angeles, and you had. Okay, so Pool A was held March 6th through the 9th, and then Pool B, 7th through the 10th. Pool C was held 9th through the 12th. D was 9th through the... So it was kind of staggered a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then in the second round, you had... it was kind of held a few days after, so you had some time for travel. But still, I do think that that's interesting that they do it that way. And then you take a look at the semifinals. You had one game go between Puerto Rico and the Netherlands go into 11 innings. The time of that game was over 4 hours. And then after that, you had a 3-hour and 12-minute game between the U.S. and Japan, which major props to the U.S. being able to get by Japan there.
Yeah.
And then you had 3.5-hour World Baseball Classic World Series. And I think it was held pretty late at night, if I'm not mistaken, because it was over... in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Yeah, and you talk about people complaining and staying up to watch the college football national championship game. The World Baseball Classic championship game on March 22nd. What was the date today? 25th. Yeah. So that was, oh my goodness.
March 22nd
That was like Wednesday, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe the final was on Wednesday.
So March 22nd Wednesday was night, Wednesday. A Wednesday night, say, what was it at 10 p.m.?
I think.
It was 10 p.m. on a Wednesday night. I mean, that's not happening on the East Coast. It's just not.
No, there's no way that's happening on the East Coast.
If you're trying
to
attract viewership, maybe. I didn't see the overnight Nielsen score for this, but I think, can we all agree that it does help push along just Team USA, I guess, because there's a lot of sports fans that don't necessarily support international competition in the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In sports. So I think us winning the World Baseball Classic would certainly help that, as, you know, winning definitely happens.
Yeah,
so,
I think it's definitely in the right direction.
Certainly does.
Winning draws eyes no matter how much people complain.
So now we'll move along here. Adrian Peterson. We'll talk about the NFL free agency here as we take a look at the man who was 8 yards away. I'm still kind of salty about that, how they didn't put him in on that last play there. Almost broke Eric Dickerson's record, but was not able to do so. So now we have 32-year-old Adrian Peterson trying to get himself a new contract. The 7th overall pick in the 2007 NFL Draft is in no rush, apparently, to find a new team. And teams are in no rush to sign him, most likely because he is asking for $8 million in the first year of his contract. And teams consider that to be a hefty asking price.
That's way too much.
Green Bay looked to kind of be in it with him. Eddie Lacy took off to the Seahawks. 1 year, $5.5 million. Oakland Raiders tailback Latavius Murray signing with the Vikings. So those are kind of eliminating holes there. The Packers just signed Christine Michael, but I could definitely see Adrian Peterson being the starter and Christine Michael being the backup there. So when you take a look at that price for Adrian Peterson, this is a guy in his career who's made 7 Pro Bowls, 4 first team All Pros, 3 second team All Pros. He's been an MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, almost 12,000 career rushing yards. And you think $8 million a year is too much?
For a 32-year-old running back, yes.
All right, so explain it. Here's your time to talk about this.
No matter what they've done in their career, $8 million for a 32-year-old running back who's had some injury issues in the past couple years is too much. I'd give him 6.5. I would top out at 6.5, maybe 7, but not 8.
I think you take a look at what's happened to him in the last couple of years and the fact that he missed an entire season. And to come back off of that is really tough for anybody to do. We haven't seen it. You talk about guys that missed because of injury or kind of off-the-field issues. Take a look at guys. I mean, Teddy Bruschi had that stroke. Michael Vick was in jail. I'm trying to think of guys right off the top of my head who missed basically entire seasons. Tiki Barber tried to come back after an early retirement, couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Ray Rice hasn't been able to come back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it hasn't necessarily been a formula for success thus far.
And that's another reason to not drop $8 million on him. The precedent is set for guys missing entire seasons and not being able to play when they get back.
Yeah, and I don't think that, you know, he's got the history of being, you know, just an all-around workhorse, but he's got too much wear and tear on those tires of legs that he has.
Yeah.
And I think I'm with Jake on this one. I think you don't pay $8 million a year for a running back who is maybe not on his way out immediately, but certainly on that decline. And I had like joked before that maybe the and I had heard also that maybe the Giants might be interested.
Yeah,
the
Giants as well.
Being a Giants fan, I was like, oh, yay, another veteran presence in the locker room. But we just locked up JPP for another four-year deal. So I don't think that is kind of viable at this point. Maybe if we had spent a little less or kind of reevaluated that a little bit, we might have a little bit more room. And I think he would be a great veteran presence in that locker room for mentoring, but it doesn't look like a possibility now.
So here would probably be one of the major issues with Adrian Peterson trying to lock up for $8 million a year. 2016 season, 3 games played, 37 rushes for 72 yards. That's 1.9 a game.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he played a full season the year before, he played 16 games, 327 rushes, which is the most that he's ever had. Or excuse me, no, that is incorrect. 327 rushes for 1,485 yards and 11 touchdowns. That's 4.5 a rush. That's still not amazing, and that's not necessarily, or it's not at all his prime. So how's he going to be able to prove to teams that he can come back from that and not kind of just be a third down back? Is that what you'd consider him nowadays?
I'd consider him a really good third down back. It's just a matter of that asking price. It's way too high. Way, way, way too high. Like I said, I'd top out at probably $6.5 million, maybe 6.75, but no higher.
I don't even know if I would even go, and I think that's what you're saying. That's kind of like your maximum that you would give him. I don't even think at this point, especially with just the way he's, you know, like we were saying, he's proven in the last couple of years, before that season where he almost had 1,500 rushing yards, which isn't all that terrible. It's up there with probably one of the He's probably up there with one of the top five, definitely the top 10 running backs in the league that year. But you got to remember, he also missed the 2014 season, only played one game, and did decent in that game, 21 rushes for 75 yards, but, you know, 3.6 yards a carry. I just don't think that if I was a GM and I was looking for that running back veteran presence, I'd probably maybe top out at maybe like $5 million, because you're not trying to, there's a very high risk with that. And
yeah, high risk, but high reward, but you're not going to spend too much money on that.
No. So,
and I love that we're talking about millions and millions of dollars in terms of not too much.
Yeah. It really puts things in perspective.
Like I just said, $5 million is not too much money.
Yeah. It just boggles my mind that I've heard that it's proportionately like favorable and stuff like that for professional athletes because of their like value and all the interest that they generate with like at least us as like being like the people that support the fandom of that. But I think at some points it just gets ridiculous, and like the nonchalance that we're just kind of talking exuding about, when we talk about millions of dollars.
Talking about multiple millions of dollars, I know. It's insane.
So if you guys had to make a prediction just off the top and taking a look at the current standing of the NFL free agency, where would you predict Adrian Peterson to go, and how long is it going to take him from now until he gets there?
I think it'll take him another like month and a half before he realizes that $8 million asking price is too high and takes a more reasonable offer, goes to the Packers on a 2-year deal.
It's crazy to me to think of someone that was spent their whole career just against the, you know, Packers are the biggest rival for the Vikings at this point. So it'd feel weird to me, but for some reason I feel like a deal for AP is not going to get done until training camp.
I mean, it'd be a reverse Brett Favre if he went to the Packers.
Yeah,
well, that'd be interesting. He'd really have to get in there fast if he wasn't signed until training camp. So we'll keep tabs on 32-year-old Adrian Peterson. We'll move along now in the Furious Five to some NCAA coaching carousel news. So, and I know this has been a hot commodity for you, Jake, to talk about in the last couple of weeks. You have UCLA falling in the Sweet 16 last night to Kentucky, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But the main, some of the news coming out of that, you had two major decisions being made. Number one, Lonzo Ball declared for the draft, which is not surprising at all.
Number two,
Steve Alford, head coach of UCLA, denied that he is leaving UCLA for the Indiana head coaching job, which I know, Jake, you were talking about that he was probably going to do. Well, he's saying that he's not going to do it. He firmly has mounted that he's staying at UCLA.
I don't buy it.
That Indiana job, Tom Crean was fired, and that's kind of been a very hot commodity in college basketball. There is a whole lot of history behind the Indiana coaching job. Another coaching kind of faux pas that we can talk about was the University of Massachusetts job, which Pat Kelsey was supposed to take from Winthrop, decided to take it, and then the day after decided not to and went back to the Eagles, who he took to the NCAA tournament this year. So we'll start with the Indiana job. Jake, why don't you buy that Steve Alford is staying with UCLA?
I don't think he wants to deal with UCLA anymore. The expectations at UCLA.
So you think the expectations at UCLA are higher than the expectations of Indiana?
They're about the same, but
I will tell you, I think they're higher because of everybody this whole year is just, oh yeah, UCLA is such a good team, they're going to win the national championship, you know, because they have Lonzo Ball and they have that starting five, and they're so great, you know, they have a great post presence, and they just shoot the ball, and Yeah, well, you had a chance to go up against a top team in Kentucky, and you let the game get away from you in the second half.
And UCLA is also a team that only hangs national championship banners. If you go to the Final Four and you lose in the Final Four, you don't get a banner for making the Final Four. They don't hang it up at Pauley Pavilion. They just kind of ignore it. They made him give back the money he got from a contract extension after a disappointing year. I wouldn't want to deal with that anymore. And I also wouldn't want to coach another ball brother. I don't think I could deal with that again.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you a little tangent if you want to go into that. Just your thought. I don't honestly want to talk about any of that. I don't want to do it. Would you like a tangent, Jake?
No, I don't want to go too much into that.
No tangent for you then.
But I wouldn't. I'll leave it at that. I wouldn't want to coach another ball brother, and there are two more coming.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to deal with that for another, because I mean they're both going to be one and done.
Yeah.
So you have one more year, then you wait a couple years, and then another one, the last one shows up, and you have to deal with that again.
Well, here's what Steve Alford said, if I could read the statement that he made last night. He said, "I'm absolutely 100% not going to Indiana. I am happy here. I love it here. We have a great recruiting class coming in a brand new practice facility," which, you know, buildings haven't stopped some people from leaving. Happens.
Maybe it's just me, but I'd also much rather live in Bloomington than
LA. This is a guy that left Iowa to go to New Mexico, so I don't think he's focused too much on that necessarily.
Yeah.
Alford, his first D1 job was at, and I don't know if they were D1 when he was at this school, but 95 to 99, he was at Southwest Missouri State, and then he went to Iowa, New Mexico, and in 2013, he earned the right to go coach UCLA, so... and he actually won the NCAA championship as a player while a member of Indiana. So that's his alma mater, too.
Yeah,
and he still doesn't go there.
That's why I don't buy it. I think he's going back there. I think he wants the challenge of building on what Tom Crean did. I mean, the Indiana fan base is a little insane. And I think they'd be more loyal to one of their own. And I think he wants the challenge. It's either Alford or Chris Mack. Like those are my two top guys for that IU job, and I really think they're going to go with Alford.
Yeah, I don't know too much about the situation, but just from what you've said, and just kind of like the way that the relationship sounds like between Alford and UCLA has kind of just boiled over. It sounds like he's just trying to like put a facade over it and make it seem a little bit better than it is, and maybe he goes somewhere else. I'm not sure where that's going to be, but being that he went to school and went to and played on Indiana makes a little bit sense. You know, we've seen coaches deny that they're leaving and go elsewhere.
I mean,
before.
Yeah. Brad Underwood left for the Illinois job the day after Oklahoma State lost in the tournament. He flew back to Stillwater with the team and then took the Indiana job a day later.
Well, you were talking about Chris Mack, and I think that's an interesting one to bring up. You have a guy who's 47 years old, has basically spent almost his whole career just focused around Xavier. Xavier has kind of been his pride and joy. So he played originally at Evansville, and then he transferred to Xavier when he was a player back in the early 90s. And then after that, he did some high school coaching. Was an assistant at Xavier for 2 years, was an assistant at Wake Forest for 3 years, went back for 5 years to be an assistant at Xavier before he was offered the head coaching job in 2009. That's where he's been. Now he's 9-6 in the tournament. He has a pair of A-10 regular season championships, one-time coach of the year, but everything that trumps that is making it to the Elite Eight, and that's when people really start to notice you. So does one Elite Eight get Chris Mack to Indiana? Indiana, maybe? I don't know. How about Georgetown?
That Georgetown job is open now.
Georgetown's still in the Big East, though. Like, that's a move within the Big East.
Well, let me tell you, I don't think the Big... Well, yeah, that is interesting if you were going to move, but what job has more precedence under it?
I think Georgetown's going to get Patrick Ewing.
Wow, that would certainly be something to talk about.
That's what the rumors have been...
Well, that just goes into can you coach as well as you play? You know, some people can, some people can't.
But I think they're willing to. I think knowing Georgetown, I think they're willing to take the risk on Patrick Ewing. I think I think if Mac leaves Indiana, he's going to – or leaves Indiana. If Mac leaves Xavier, he's leaving the Big East because – and that was kind of the whole thing with Kelsey coming back to Winthrop. I think he might know something we don't about that Xavier job opening up. And I think –
Think he might try to go after the Xavier job instead of the UMass job?
I think that's why he turned UMass down.
I think that would be more of a...
The Xavier job's opening up, and he wants that.
What do you guys think about Thompson? You think Thompson goes anywhere and fills any of these spots?
Thompson, I don't know.
Well, who would be your contender to take the UMass job if maybe you could think of one off the top of your head?
I mean, I can't think of anybody at the lower levels of college ball who would be jumping to go to UMass.
That's an A-10 school, too, a team that I would say every 2 or 3 years you see them in contention there for the top of the A-10.
And the A-10's a good basketball
conference.
Absolutely
it is. Yeah, I've always had respect for them.
The A-10's a really good basketball conference, but I don't know anyone who'd be jumping at the job.
Well, you never know when a team in the A-10 like LaSalle or St. Bonaventure or Dayton, even though they were the regular season champion,
So Nick McDevitt, UNC Asheville, he might swing for that.
All right, well, they call him Jake Goodman. So we'll keep tabs on NCAA coaching changes. We'll move along in the Furious Five here. How about Devin Booker dropping 70 last night? The Suns still lose. This is one of the youngest lineups. I kind of wanted to clump these two stories together. So you have the Phoenix Suns a couple of days ago started the youngest lineup in NBA history. It was younger than 15 of the 16 average starting lineup ages for the teams in the Sweet 16, which is unbelievable.
Wow.
So it was average of they were all about 21 and change. It was 21, and it was the average is younger than all of us, actually. So, and even me, I'm the youngest one here.
Look at that.
Yeah. So you have, and then you have Devin Booker showing up and dropping 70 points in the Suns game last night, and they still weren't able to win.
Even the team last night. The oldest guy on the team is Alex Len. He was born in 1993. Everyone else was born in 96 or later.
Yeah, talk about veteran leadership. But hey, you never know. So. 70 points for Devin Booker. That's a franchise record in the Suns' 130-120 loss against the Boston Celtics. No one else in the Suns game scored more than 11 points.
I don't know. I think just looking at it, this just confirms to me that the Celtics are going to be a force to be reckoned with when come playoff time.
All right. Well... This is certainly interesting. I mean, you could put a little bit on the Celtics. I wanted to talk more about Devin Booker. So you talk about age 20. He's the youngest Suns player to score 40 points in a game. He's the first 20-year-old with at least 50 points in a game since Brandon Jennings in 2009. He joins Brandon Jennings and LeBron James as just the third player since 1983 to score 50-plus points before turning 21. He's the youngest player to score at least 60 points in a game ever. And he is the eighth player in NBA history and the only active player to score 65 or more in a game. So you take all of that, and what does that say about Devin Booker, number one? And number two, what does it say about the rest of the Suns? Probably not too good.
It says the rest of the Suns players aren't very good. Their next leading scorer was Alex Len. And
with 11.
And then Barbosa also had 11. And then everyone else was in single digits. Like, that says everything you need to know about this Suns team, that they have one really good player who is going to light it up every now and then and will probably leave for a better team
be the next thing. Is you can kind of talk about Devin Booker's stats, but ultimately, you need to take a look at how that affects how he's helping his team.
Yeah.
I mean, they...
How he's been helping his team, really, in this year.
Only three players on that team scored in double figures, and they really only lost by 10. That says a lot about how well Devin Booker played last night.
Yeah, you can't really... You know, like you're saying, you can't really base a... these team sports, you can't really base off one player, but... looks like that's all really they got help from last night.
So the Phoenix Suns have already been eliminated from the playoff picture. They're sitting in the basement with the LA Lakers in the Western Conference with a record of 22-51. But you still have a diamond in the rough in Devin Booker. Last year, he averaged 13.8 points. This year, he's averaging 21.6. He's played 71 games thus far, and he's field goal percentage is 424. That's better from last year. And he's shooting 364 from three. So this is a good quality player there.
On a really bad team.
Yeah, how about... And sometimes you have a situation where they can really help their teams, but this does not look to be the case. So if you had to make a very, very, very early prediction for next year or the offseason for Devin Booker to be shipped off somewhere, maybe for some veterans, where do you think he would go? How about, let me throw this on the table for you, Matt. How about the Knicks shipping off some of their veterans that are not doing that well in New York, putting them in Phoenix and grabbing some young talent?
Dear God, please.
Can Phil Jackson do it? Will he do it?
I don't think he'll do it.
And then
I don't know how much Phil Jackson actually has say in the way the Knicks operate.
And then Phil Jackson tries to force Devin Booker into the triangle, and it doesn't work.
Phil, you know what? Like, going back to our other conversation, I'd love to see them throw some John Thompson in there. Throw that in there. Maybe then the triangle will work. He has experience with it, maybe.
That don't call it Princeton offense. He runs at Georgetown. Like, I hate the Princeton offense.
I mean,
to
your question, I think that's what the Knicks need to do. They need to just not keep that. All New York sports I've seen are like this in years past, where they just spend money on guys that were either once good or played good against them and are now over the hill or just going over the crest of their prime. And it's just not, the Knicks need to build, I think, through the draft in the next couple of years if they still have draft picks left. So
it's a big if.
Yeah, so that's a whole other conversation for another day. But Devin Booker dropping 70, keep an eye on him as some of the top young talent in the NBA. And I'm sure that we'll have much more to say to him in the coming weeks and in the coming years here as we keep talking sports. So we move to the fifth topic in the Furious Five, and that is NFL rule changes. We have been talking about these all offseason. It's something that personally interests me. And now a list has come out, and I'm actually reading from a Fox Sports article right here. It is titled, "The 14 Best Potential Rule Changes from the 2017 NFL Season, from Overtime Length to Jersey Covers," or Jersey Colors, I should say. So you take a look at some of these. I'm going to read these out to you guys, and I want you to go yay or nay on them.
Okay.
Number one, reducing the length of preseason and regular season overtime periods to 10 minutes like it's a hockey game.
No.
I would say nay. I don't think there's any point. I mean, it's still the first team.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still pretty much the first team
to score.
Tie.
I know it's a preseason. No, it says and
didn't
regular season.
Like three,
yeah, no.
Weren't there like
that's
two?
A no.
Yeah, I'm gonna say negative.
How about
that
permit
one.
Clubs opt out of the color rush jerseys for Thursday night football?
I'm gonna say
permit,
yay.
Not permit.
I'm gonna say yay on that because some of them are just awful.
Some of them are really ugly.
Does it affect the team mentally by what jersey they're wearing? What if you gave them pink? I mean, you're representing your team no matter what color you wear, am I right?
I get that, but I don't know. I think they're just that one. I think it's a non-issue.
All right, allow teams, and I don't want to be hypocritical here, but allow teams to wear an alternate helmet during the year. I think that's okay. I guess if they can pick their helmet.
What's that alternate,
they can pick
like,
their jerseys.
Alternate color helmet, you're saying?
Yeah, so they usually when they wear different jerseys in the NFL, they can't switch their helmet.
Okay.
Yeah. So they don't do that. So you talk about the old Patriot helmet, the old Philadelphia Eagle helmet, stuff like that.
I want to see the Ravens break out the old logo, the B in the shield with the wings. I miss that thing. Let them bring that back. If they're going to wear throwback jerseys, go all out.
How about replacing the sideline replay monitor with a handheld device and authorizing designated members of the officiating department to make a final decision on replay reviews? That would be interesting.
I guess that's good.
That I think so. You have
so you're saying one guy is going to decide. I don't think that's a good idea.
No. So you have designated members of the officiating department. Okay. So you have more guys being involved.
Oh, all right.
In terms, it's except for the on-field. So usually it's just the on-field referees making a call.
Uh-huh.
But you could have different guys in there, different officials, officiating set, more people authorized to make calls on plays, on reviewed plays like that.
I think it's a good idea. I mean, it's more eyes on the field, so you know it does provide like more leeway for differing opinions, but at least you're getting more eyes to see it and maybe pointing out things that you didn't, like say on like a fumble or something when a ball comes loose before a guy's knee is down. I don't see it really like influencing too much either way in any other place.
All right, two more here before we go to break. Number one, expanding the crown of the helmet foul to include the hairline part of the helmet. And number two, permanently moving touchbacks to the 25-yard line, which they tested last year. That messed me up so much.
Yeah, that really threw me off.
Nay to the second one. The first one, probably not.
No.
Expand crown of the helmet foul to include hairline part of the helmet.
No.
So you talk about pulling on the hair. I think they can pull on the hair. Honestly, I if you're going to have long hair like that, that's the price that you pay.
I saw a guy one time get pulled down because he had long hair below his numbers from an interception. It's completely legal.
Oh, there was a guy.
I'm nate of both.
Do you guys remember the guy? His name was Ray Manaluga, I believe.
Ray Manaluga, I remember.
Yeah,
that.
Ray Manaluga, the guy from Cincinnati. He had probably the longest hair of anybody I've ever seen play in the NFL.
Something out of Lion King.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, and he had that blonde. It was like blonde orange hair.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I remember
that. So that was one
that
there.
Was not that a was good look.